thank you for letting me speak here tonight, and I thank the Lord for the opportunity to let you know what's been going on at the work at the Comer Wilderness Camp. I'd like to start out by having you open here with me to Acts 15, 35 through 41. And I'm going to be reading that for you here. Paul also and Barnabas continued in the Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord, with many others also. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, "Let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord, and see how they do." And Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia, and went not with them to do to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder, one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed unto Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas, departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. So, who is Barnabas? In Acts 4:36, he's called the son of encouragement. And, as we'll see, his name matched his character. Now, who was John Mark? We know from Acts 12:25 and Acts 13:5 that John Mark had gone with them on the first missionary journey. Acts 12:25 tells us, "And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their ministry, and took with them John, whose surname was Mark." And Acts 13:5 says, "And when they were in Salamis, they preached the word of God in the synagogues of the Jews, and they had also John to their minister." Although John Mark traveled with them for the first part of the journey, he left the missionary team at Perga, as Acts 13:13 records. "Now when Paul and his company loosed from Pamphos, they came to Perga and Pamphylia, and John, departing from them, returned to Jerusalem." But, and verse 38 says, in that same chapter, "But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia, and had not gone with them to the work." So what happened? Why did John Mark leave the missionary team? What did he do? Perhaps the best explanation is the simplest one given plainly in verse 38. He had not gone with them to do the work. He was going along in an important part of their missionary team. He had been proven unreliable. He quit before the job was done. Scholars say that this is born out of the original manuscripts. Paul calls Mark in Greek "ok exio," which means not worthy, not fit. He considered John Mark undependable. We've all experienced the frustration of being around people that are unreliable. After a while, we learn not to count on them. If there's an important job to do, we look for people that we can count on. This may have been what was in Paul's mind. Now, try and bear with me. It does have something to do with work at camp, and actually a good message here. Paul was used greatly by God, and yet there were times when he can be very strong-willed. Perhaps one of the reasons there was such a sharp contention between Paul and Barnabas was that ordinarily Barnabas was a very easygoing person. He was a gentle man who had great compassion for others as well. He was willing to give Mark another chance. When Paul was ready to give up on him, and then Barnabas was willing to work with Mark when Paul wanted to have nothing to do with him. Barnabas wanted to show patience to Mark when Paul saw no hope for the young man. Adam Clark commented in 1825, "John Mark had been tried in trying circumstances, and he failed. Paul, therefore, would not trust him again. The affection of Barnabas led him to hope the best, and was therefore desirous to give him another trial. Barnabas would not give up." We don't read anything more about Barnabas. Barnabas had come from Cyprus, and it was his home. He had a desire to take the gospel to his own people. We know from tradition that he had a great ministry there, and from Cyprus, a great ministry was carried over into North Africa. Although Barnabas doesn't appear in Scripture after this point, we do read a lot more about John Mark. In Philemon 24 and Colossians 4:10, Mark is mentioned as a fellow laborer with Paul. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia comments, about 11 years elapsed before we hear him again. And that's talking about after Acts. He is at Rome with Paul. Obviously, at that point, the breach is healed. He is now one of the faithful few among Jewish Christians who stand by Paul. He is Paul's honored fellow worker and a great comfort to him. Paul's own words. This is what Paul writes about John Mark in 2 Timothy 4:11. Only Luke is with me. Take Mark and bring him with thee, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. Now Paul calls Mark profitable to me for the ministry. How's that for a change? So what brought about all this miraculous change in John Mark? God used one man, and perhaps others, but we know of Barnabas who believed in him. And there was, an encouragement to him, and he helped him overcome his failings. One last word about this story. John Mark became so encouraged in the Lord that he had to write about the story of Jesus. And we have all read his book. In fact, we just heard about it tonight. It's the Gospel of Mark. It may come as a surprise to you that only recently in Ireland, divorce only became legalized in 1995. Most people know Ireland is a staunchly Catholic country, yet Adam's sin is present in all people in all ages. With the modernization of Ireland came the tsunami of wrecked lives that usually follow nations that choose humanism as their god. This is our aim at Comora Wilderness Camp, to be the sons of encouragement, to serve the Lord by seeking to give others another chance where others see no value in doing so. And so what I'm going to do now is I'd like to first give you a little PowerPoint-type presentation on not only the Comora Wilderness Camp, but what we've done in Ireland as a family. We actually wore many hats when we were over there. And so I'd like to go over a few of the things that we did as we spent time over there. And then afterwards, I've got a short video clip that I'd like to show you. We put that together. The narrator is Nathaniel Yoder. He's our most Irish-sounding person in the ministry over there. And the music was supplied by my girls, and for the most part. And the footage was gathered by our chiefs, and I did some of the editing. So we'll start out by talking about the Comora Wilderness Camp. As you can see in this picture, each one of those little houses is a church house. That's the number of and locations of our churches. There's literally hundreds of them in the United States. And here you can see a picture of Europe. Europe, by and large, we're down to a handful. We've got Ireland. There's a fellowship church in London. And then Poland. And I've heard recently that that our ministry out in the Ukraine is threatened by the war that's going on there. In fact, they're trying. There's a draft going on for young men in their, I guess, 18 or so. So it's kind of questionable about how well we're going to survive in the Ukraine. But as you can see here, there's just a handful of churches. So the need for an Anabaptist perspective in what used to be called the heart of Christianity is there's a great need. So not only is there the Comer Wilderness Camp reaching out to the boys there, but it's our presence there. And we actually, in the congregation, we have seekers from all over Europe. We have people attending from the Ukraine, from Poland, from England, of course from Ireland. But these aren't just curiosity seekers. These are people that have pulled up roots and gone to a strange country to bring their families to see what we're about, and in some cases to join our church. So there's a good work that's being done in Ireland, in that regard especially. And this is a picture of Dunmore East Christian Fellowship. I wish it got a little brighter. Let me see if I can brighten that up a little bit. Yeah, I guess that's going to be about it. And someone can correct me, but I believe it's been there since 1996. This is one of the industries that support the camp over there, and the ministry, not the camp. Ideal Woodworking. They don't really have pressure-treated wood over there in Europe, and so we import a lot of it through some of the brethren in Virginia. They send containers over there, and it's hard for the people to believe that that pressure-treated wood will last as long as it does. Most of the wood over there doesn't last too long in that wet environment. And this is a picture of the workshop. Again, it's not really coming out as bright as I hoped it does, but it actually looks a little bit brighter there. We don't have them working in a dungeon. So, and another picture of the shop. And we actually did open the camp back in, I believe it was November of 2012. And we had up to, I think, four boys. And we had them there for about 5 months or so. And when they were there, we did what camp does around the United States and now in Europe. Teaching the boys, teaching them how to plan their environment, their camp setup. Teaching them how to make a good living space and be proud in a good way of where they live. Teaching them industry and giving them self-confidence. Here's a lad that's carrying reeds. We tried to conform to the local architecture or traditional architecture with a thatched roof and wattle and daub for the sides, the walls of their structures. And I think on the left there and the right, just kind of working, building the tents. And this is, again, trying to conform, giving them an association here, something that the Irish people can relate to. And so that involved some of the chiefs there learning how to make thatched roofs, and I think they ended up doing a pretty decent job. We got permission from a farmer to harvest some of the reeds by the riverside and to construct the thatched roof. What you see on the left here is wattle and daub. It's taking willow saplings and weaving it, and then throwing a mud manure mixture. It's not as bad as it sounds because it's actually painted over. And on the right there is our round, call it round top. That's our chow hall, basically. So again, just teaching them some skills. And of course, everything that goes along with camp is the important stuff. Some of the important stuff is eating. And it's important to note that in Ireland, camping is not the same that we associate with as we do here. In America, especially for young men, camping is the substance of things that turns boys into men, a way to prove their manhood by providing and by cooking and building. In Europe, though, camping does have more of a negative connotation. They think gypsy. They think travelers. And there are gypsies, they call them travelers, in England and in Ireland. And they don't have a great reputation. In fact, there's 5 national forests in Ireland. All of them have hiking trails. And all of them have tea rooms for after the hike. So you sit down for a pot of tea and a little dessert after you go hiking, and then you go home. None of them have campsites. There's very little free camping. You basically have to do it on private property. There's no public campgrounds. So it's been a little bit of a challenge trying to show the people over there that that there are some benefits to camping. And it's taking time, but we are getting people to open their eyes to see the value of this model of dealing with young folks, especially young boys. And teaching them cleanliness and planning, writing, reading, writing, arithmetic. And, of course, teaching them to appreciate God's creation. And the creature in the middle there, it's not a scrub brush, that's a hedgehog. And, of course, hiking. And these are pictures of the Comoros Mountains, about half an hour from the ocean side. They rise up about to 710 meters, about 2,100 feet. And they have a kind of a unique feature. You can see these lakes in the mountains. It's kind of a remnant of probably of the flood and glacial periods, where there's, you can't really see it there, but those dark spots are actually some lakes there. I wish it came out a little bit better. And so our mantra here is a plan, do, and evaluate. Evaluate what we did. Now, I mentioned that we originally did have campers from about November to May. What happened in that situation, one of our campers, his mother desperately wanted him in camp, and we went ahead and admitted him into camp, and things were going well with him. There was an issue with one of the grandparents. In fact, when they came, and this before I got here and got there, they came and they said, "I'm going to watch you very closely." There's a lot of cynical people about religion, having to do with some of the clergy abuse cases, and even before that, a lot of doubt and cynicism within the people. People think that Ireland is a monolithic people that are dedicated to the Catholic religion, but that's not really true. There's a lot of different people, just as there's a lot of different people here. And one of the major forms of belief is unbelief and cynicism. And it's been a learning process. Not all boys, even if they need to be in camp, our camp isn't necessarily the best place for them, and it's been a learning process to identify situations that may not be good. And so, basically, the mother wanted him to be there. Grandmother didn't. The mother overrode the grandmother, and the grandmother called social services, and they essentially shut down camp. to have an investigation. They said investigation would be over in a few weeks. It actually turned out to being it turned out to be 9 months. After about 3 weeks, about 3 months, as part of the board, we determined that we needed to get things going along there. And so I went over given my background here, to deal with the bureaucracy, deal with the social workers, to see if I can't get things going. And part of the problem, too, was learning how to deal with social workers and people in the government. In my line of work, I deal with social workers every day. I don't see them as having horns on their heads, although there may be some of that sentiment even amongst our people. And there are some bad eggs, to be sure. But I was, when I got over there, there was suspicion on our part, and there was suspicion on their part, too. And both, I would say, were justified. From the Irish viewpoint, they have no idea who we are. In fact, they were very concerned that we wouldn't be taking the boys over to the doctor if something happened. And so we had to reassure them that we would indeed, even if they had a scratch. Things are handled differently here in our camps here. I think we're given a little bit more leeway. If there's first aid to be given, they're given it. And we don't necessarily report all these things to the social workers. In Europe, they tend to be hyper-vigilant about these things, especially in a residential care type situation. So we had to reassure them that if they had a scratch, they would be seen. But they didn't know Mennonite from Jehovah Witness from Mormon. And so a lot of these things really had to be confronted and explained. And that's a large part of what I did was meeting with a lot of the bureaucrats and social workers, trying to get this get the preconceptions overcome. And I had to say that I was very impressed with a lot of the social workers over there. We had this in common. We wanted the best, what was for the boys, and I can truly say that that was true from the people that I spoke with. In many situations, and I'm sure this happens in camps over here, we have a divorce and remarriage situation, and mom gets a new boyfriend or a new husband, and son is the third wheel now. And so they need to find a place to essentially dump him. And we have to be kind of on guard for that. We have to make sure that they realize that we are a religious organization. No, we're not going to sit them down and brainwash them 24 hours a day, but at the same time, this is where we're coming from. We're going to frame everything as if it is, that the Lord is the creator. But our intention is not to turn the boys into mini Mennonites. Our intention is to teach them about the Lord. And so that was an important part of the dialogue. They were concerned, as we were, that these boys would be just dumped off. The fact that this is an 18-month course, and that the fact that we have a dedicated worker, our family worker, whose specific job is to work with the families. It's not just the boys. The boys are just the tip of the iceberg. There's communication problems with conflict resolution, not with only with the boys, but also with the families, how they deal with each other. And so we have a family worker whose sole job is to facilitate communication, conflict resolution, that kind of stuff. So explaining that was important. And also just to let the people know that it's not a babysitting service. We're there to transform lives and through the Lord. And so once I think once everything was on top, on board, I think it was, we had committed 6 months to 2 years to get this resolved. And within 4 months, we had boys back in camp. So I praise the Lord for that. And it's still a day-to-day thing. There's still going to be suspicion. There's always going to be people, bureaucrats, trying to cover themselves. And you may have also heard recently about how the Ohio camp just recently closed as well. Hopefully that's just temporarily as well. But we hope to avoid those conflicts by addressing misconceptions and building relationships. In America, we like to try and get things done. Get her done is our mantra. But over there, it's let's sit down for a cup of tea and get to know each other a little bit better. So a little bit on the conflict and how it was resolved. And so there was a lot of work getting back into the governmental compliance. Mostly it was writing regulations so we could be held accountable to our own regulations. That's what they were looking for. And I think that was a good thing. It helped us to address everything and think about everything, or at least as much as we could possibly do. And yeah, you can't really see that too well, but that's Nehemiah. Out by the loo, what they call the loo. That's basically the outhouse. That's the word for the outhouse. One of the big problems that they saw was there wasn't enough privacy. In residential care in Ireland, you're required to have, each child is required to have their own room, their own bathroom, and a cell phone. And so that doesn't really fit our camp model. They wanted us to change, but we did say that that was kind of an essential part of our camp life, is living together, learning to live together, learning to communicate without texting, talking to people face-to-face, and that kind of thing. And so, to their credit, they relented. They didn't stonewall us, but they did insist that we had to have a little bit more screening in the loo. So, here's Nehemiah with one of the other chiefs working on doing some of that construction. And there was a lot of meetings. We've already had several board meetings over there. We try to get there over there at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. And these are some of the board members. Mark King from Pennsylvania. And there's myself, Marvin Zimmerman. He's a Horning man from Pennsylvania. Dwight Martin, he's the Cumberland Conference. He's the board director. Dan Yoder and Jonathan Yoder are both part of the church out there, and they're both on the board. J.D. Hostetler from Ohio, and Wendell Hostetler from, I think, Virginia. He's our minister out there now. During the downtime, which was about, like I said, 7 months, actually more than that, 9 months, we had something that had to keep the crew busy. And so we decided we're going to try and convert. There's an old abandoned house. We're going to try and convert that out to some livable room for staffing. And out in Ireland, you can't just create, get a piece of land and put up a house. It's highly, highly regulated, and it has to go through a planning commission. You have to consult with them the style, the size, the color of your house, where it's located. And usually, new construction is very hard to get permits for new construction because they don't want to overconstruct. There was a boom in the 1990s in which there was too much constructed, and it led to the crash of 2008, or that was one of the repercussions of 2008, and the housing prices bottomed out. So it's very hard to get new construction. What you can do, though, is find an abandoned house and put an addition on it, and that's what we ended up doing. This was a house that was very close to right close to camp, and Most of these houses, small houses, were built in the 1930s and 40s during the Depression to house people because of the Depression. Left a lot of people homeless. So this is vintage 1930s Ireland. And that's what we had to deal with. So we got it cleaned up. And put the crew to work, our chiefs. Dwayne Yoder there from Missouri in the foreground. He was our crew chief, our foreman. And he's the maintenance man. Sebastian was his assistant maintenance man. And that's primarily what we did during the downtime. Putting in a well, pouring a slab for the addition. And there's myself, Sebastian. And the man on the left is... His name is Jan Larue. He's a Frenchman, but he's one of our chiefs, and he's been a very valuable member not only of the congregation but of camp. He's really got a heart for the Lord and a heart for the children. And then again, just working, happily working at to get this job done. And it often rains there in construction work, but we work through the rain. We also hosted several work groups. This is a work group that came from Pennsylvania. Again, a Horning group. It's hardworking young men. Some young women came out as well. And this is our Chahorta. It's basically the central meeting place of camp. We put that up about a year and a half ago. We've had several work groups come out for that. And we have meetings there and family night, sharing with the boys too. And there's Jan. Football is king in Europe, and football meaning soccer. And so we made a camp-style soccer net with some of the lads there. You can't see that too well, but sometimes I have people try and guess what they're doing there. Anybody from camp know what they're doing? Any guesses? Sauna. There you go. Get some hot rocks, cover on intent, throw some water on it, and you can see some of the clothing's up in the tree. You can't really see that, but that's one of the pastimes of camp. And then meeting with the families, getting the lads to know what how a functioning family works is an important thing. This is to get together for St. Patrick's Day. It's an important holiday in Ireland, and teaching some of the lads things about the solar system. Here they're putting together cray paper or paper mache, sun and Jupiter and planets, and then going out for hikes. Other things that we did when we were out there was, you might know one of the ladies out here, Rainey, came to visit us, and so the girls took her on a tour of Ireland. And that's out on the beach. Like to have cookouts on the beach. A large part of our work was hosting the work groups, keeping Lori and the girls busy, cooking and cleaning after the men. And this was our work group from Pennsylvania. And hiking, Sebastian caught this sheep for some of the men there. And if he's not chasing deer here, he's chasing sheep over there. And then encouraging friends and seekers. A big part of our ministry out there was was relating to the seekers. Like I mentioned before, there a lot of people were just coming from all over Europe, and I still see that as a job that's not quite done. And it took a lot of prayer and seeking the Lord's will to see where He would have us. But our hearts, part of our hearts, are still left in Ireland. I think I felt we related very well with the seekers that were over there. Obviously, having a lot in common with them, not coming from an ethnically Anabaptist background. A large part of the problem with seekers becoming members of the church, I think, is continuity. Now, Dan Yoder and Nathaniel Yoder have been there, and his family and Jonathan's have been there for over a dozen years already. But getting people to commit, and I think something that we need to think about is long-term people there. If missionaries are coming and going, I think what runs through a lot of seekers' minds is, you know, how stable is this congregation? If they can't commit to us, why should we commit? So that gave us kind of a dilemma in leaving there. And like I said, part of our heart still left there, and maybe someday we'll end up going back just to build a church over there. But that was one of the big challenges. We have a number of families that have been there for well over 5 years and still not ready to commit to membership. But we still do appreciate them, and we try to address their concerns, and I don't think it's an insurmountable problem, obviously. But showing commitment is an important part, and getting permanent members of the congregation over there, I think, is also an important part as well. And I'm sure that's true for any mission anywhere that we go. This was a young lady whose father, and she came from Romania to come and see what we're about. And so we spent some time hosting them. And these are some other young ladies from people, seekers in the church that have been there for a while. Just showing them that we love them. And love through food is a common theme. And so that's what we did. Just breaking bread and breaking breaking cookies together, I guess. I'm not sure how else to put that. And then respite care. We were able to, Lori and the girls were able to take care of some children, so some of the long-term missionaries there can actually have time off. Jonathan and Joyce Yoder were able to take a second honeymoon before one of their children came and was delivered. And Anna and Maggie had a wonderful time taking care of the little children there. And there you can see me watching over the children. I'm in the kitchen. Some of the other children. And then community outreach. We've had several open houses, and I think that's important, and that probably can work wherever it's done. Just opening your doors and letting people come in, see what we're all about, answering questions and leaving misconceptions. Nehemiah again, having a intense conversation with some of the people there. And again, over food, that's always an important thing. Tea and whatever. They're really into tea over there. And this is all in the Chohorta. And then, of course, reaching out to our neighbors. It's we're fortunate to get a really nice rental over there. rentals, pretty similar to what we have over here as far as the rates, surprisingly. We did not, however, expect to be in the middle of a hurricane, and that's actually Hurricane, I think, Darwin. And you can see the overlay there. That's Ireland right in the middle of the eye of the storm. And a lot of trees down. Nothing more major than that, though. Oh, yeah, and a broken fence and gate. And this is our one of our nice neighbors. We had her over. She also was a product of divorce, or not a product, but a she felt the repercussions from divorce. And she really appreciated having some one-on-one time. As we go more and more into these electronic relationships, that makes personal relationships more valuable. And she and her grandfather followed us over to church. We invited him out to church, and she bought a whole new dress, and just really, really excited about having personal relationships with each other. And we hope that one day she'll have a personal relationship with the Lord. There's Nehemiah taking care of the neighbor's horse. And Sebastian was in high demand over there. Foxes are one of the few animals that prey on livestock, and they'll go after the lambs soon after they're born. So he was very popular amongst all the farmers over there. So he had hundreds of acres to hunt on and trap on. And there's Sebastian with a little tender side with his lamb. And of course, witnessing was important. We had the opportunity to go where my family came from in Malta. And actually, Lori's family came from Ireland, and we tried to track down where her family came from. But in some of these Catholic countries, in Malta and in Ireland, probably in Poland, are probably the highest proportion of Catholic people. They actually were very curious about us. And we had a number of opportunities to talk about our faith. In fact, probably when we were in Malta over the period of about a week and a half, and Malta is the biblical name for Malta would be Melita, where Paul was shipwrecked. That's where my family's from. We probably had about maybe a dozen people just ask about us, and it kind of begged the question, you know, why. What happened was they usually asked the women, and the way I was dressed, and even with my plain beard and plain clothes, people didn't really ask, but they did ask about the women. So it gave me definitely food for thought. Are we somewhat being unequally yoked in that regard? And it definitely gave food for thought. But that did open doors, and we had some very good conversations. And again, at the airport, people just come up and ask, and very freely talk about these things. And again, finding our roots. This was in Queenstown, in County Cork. This would be the town where Lori's relatives, her great-great-grandmother, or her great-grandmother, left for America just over 100 years ago. And, of course, enjoying his creation. We had plenty of opportunity for that. And, again, this one of the things that we really enjoyed was going out to the beach and have cookouts on the beach and taking walks. Ireland is very safety conscious. The roads are very narrow, though, so it's very foolhardy not to wear safety vests, and that's what everybody does. And enjoying the Lord's creation. And there's the entire entire crew at camp. And then just a final parting shot. Okay, so now I'd like to just show you a little video that we put together, kind of a promotional video. And I think we got enough time for that. Well, we might run a little bit over, but it's kind of nice little video. Afterwards, I'll turn it back over to Larry.
Ireland, a land of rugged beauty and great heritage. A land well known for its lush green landscapes and its earthy musical culture. It is here in County Waterford, the Cumara Mountains, that a small yet significant work has begun. Hidden, yet in plain sight, close to the village of Rathgormack, down a windy country road and off the beaten path, we will take you to the place where it all began, a place of community where we learn to help ourselves and others. After all, no man is an island.
This is a little drawn out here, this is the drive from Rathgormack to camp.
You might be wondering how all of this took place. Well, here's a recap. Back in 1996, the newly formed church at Dunmore East noticed special needs within the community. Students from the area were having difficulty fitting in, and the local officials were at a loss to know how to deal with them.
That there's a facility run by the government that Sobol came to us and told us today that he has a boy who cannot go to the local schools. None of the schools will accept him anymore. Some of these other developments took place here with the school and with these local boys, and we kept reading about Bald Eagle Boys Camp, and then I read that they were thinking of starting a camp in Maryland and perhaps in Virginia, and so that sort of really struck a keynote in my mind that, well, if they're starting new camps, why not start one in Ireland as well?
Okay. sure if that audio is coming through, but this is Rathgormick, the town that's closest to camp, and this is the drive, basically a picture of the drive. It's a typical Irish town. It's got two pubs, one church, and a corner
the
grocery store.
Talked about it, how that could be a real way of reaching out to the people of Ireland. And, so that started the ball rolling, as it were. It still seemed like an impossible dream, with just a few of us talking, but as more people were brought in to listen, thankfully, Bald Eagle gave some time and energy to it. The Mission Interest Committee, our mission sponsoring mission board, as well.
And I'm not sure if you can really make out.
In 2012, we were enabled to rent a lot adjacent to camp property, which had a few derelict buildings on it. Restoration began in late September with the opportune arrival of Chief Dwayne Yoder, our maintenance man, Chief Wendell Zeisset, our supervisor, and Miss Susan Burkholder, our cook. A maintenance building, office, and kitchen became operational after much hard labor. All this made it possible for camp to begin in early November with the arrival of our first camper. In December, our second camper finds his place among us, changing the dynamics of our fledgling group. Making it possible to do a few more things. In April, we were blessed with the arrival of two additional campers, adding a new dimension to camp life. With this arrival, construction of a new sleep tent became imperative. Around this time, we also began construction of a larger dining space known as Chahorta. We wish to thank all who came and contributed liberally to this project, namely Chief Eugene Hoover, Chief Mark King, and the two groups in Pennsylvania and a few other volunteers. It was sad yet thrilling to experience our first graduation. The first building at campsite was the Loo, followed by Round Top. These structures were based on an early Irish design using wattling and daubing with an essential ingredient. And yep, you got it. Real men don't use gloves.
To thank you for visiting our campsite. While this campsite has some similarities, it's got some obvious differences. We'll show the latter. The Loop, where we take nature's call very seriously.
Enough about that, we'll move on. Now this is what many of you would call chuck tent, but we took our round top just one step further. Just contemplate, if you will, the majesty and grandeur of this building. Notice the wattle and the daub. Why don't you come and take a look inside?
With that comes a lot of green grass, but we take great pride in keeping it well groomed.
By the way, this is our cook tent. As we say in French, pretty neat, ain't it?
Whenever we can take them, and we are in the process of acquiring forest land from the government for future campsites. Land close to camp has become available, which we purchased in order to cater to staff housing needs. Construction has already begun. The future has never looked brighter.
Okay. Well, Larry tells me I've got time for a couple questions. I know I'm running over, but I'll let Larry tell me when enough's enough.